Well, you know these fatal moments, these instances. How many of you remember, and I'm going to have to go back to the original theme because it's connected with that fatal first moment. I look down here, you know, and there you are. You're sitting there with a girl. You're all sitting there, see. Your life is fairly, I presume, stable. You have arrived at this moment when you say, ah, to hell with it, I loused it up. How many of you ever feel that sense? That somehow other people are living the real life. And you're just sort of flubbing around in the bushes, see? How many of you have the feeling one day your life is going to begin? And up to now, you're ad-libbing. One day it's going to happen, see? Well, this is really the symbolism of the prom. That's the beginning of something at the end of something else. And you know, I'm coming down here tonight, and it's May. The 15th of May was the anniversary of my senior prom. And I'll never forget it. For about, for about two semesters, I had my eye on this chick, see. And I was in this big high school, 3,000 kids. Fantastic. You know, can you imagine, do you ever think of a high school as some kind of compost heap? Yeah, do you ever go past a high school and it's a compost heap, really? It's fermenting. It's three layers of bubbling. God knows what's going to come out of this. You know, there it is. It's laying there. Just, and you can smell it when you walk past it. It's all beginning. And you'd go past our high school. We had 3,000 kids all jammed in there together. Half of them were from families, you know, where the guys worked in the steel mills and other guys worked in the roundhouse. And there's always one little fine, thin layer of kids in every high school, the kids that make it. You know what I mean by the kids that make it? They're the kids that edit the literary journal. You're the kid that buys it. The world of difference, I'll tell you. Then there's the kids that write for the school paper, and all you do is get it once a week. Somebody lays it on your desk, and you read about it. Then there's the kids that are on the debating team. Then there's the kids that are the prom queen. The kids that are on the program committee. It's always the same kids. Kids named Audrey. Barbara. We had a girl named Dolores Smith. She ran the school. She was a dictator. Oh, yeah. I mean, she had a fantastic figure, everything, you know. And she was prom queen. She was junior prom queen. She was the head of the sophomore debating class. She operated the biology club her own way. So it was announced that Dolores Smith was going to be the prom queen, of course, of our prom. It was just accepted, you know. And all the rest of us were privileged to come and see Dolores, the prom queen. Now, you know, remember when you were a senior and you were just beginning to finish your high school and you had this feeling of being really important? You'd walk through the classrooms. It's May. Oh, boy, there must be 100,000 kids out there right now who feel that they're really on top of it because they're seniors in teen-neck high. You know, you walk along. Yep, I'm the biggest guy in this place. I'm a senior. You look around. And they had the announcement about bids. You were supposed to, if you were a senior class member, pay your dues, and you would get a bid for the prom. Which also meant you could go to the senior banquet, and which meant that you were allowed to come and applaud Dolores. Okay. And I get my bid, see, and how many of you remember your advisor and your advisory class, see? Old Miss Snyder sitting up there in the front. And the day we came in, it was about 2 weeks before the prom, Miss Snyder announces, she says, today, we're going to pass out the bids. We're going to pass the bids out now, and I want you children to know, I've seen thousands of children come through my class. And I want you to know this is an important thing, going to the prom. You'll remember it all of your life. You know, she was one of these gray-haired ladies who read Ivanhoe. Yeah, and she was constantly reading Romeo and Juliet. And she was the head of the English department. And Miss Snyder is telling us that this is important. And she says, now, a lot of you are going to say, ah, I don't want to go to this. A lot of you are going to say, ah, this is just a dance, but it's very important. Remember this. And ahead of me, I could see Schwartz, who was anti-dance. Schwartz was a little human bowling ball. You know, the kind that sweats. His idea of a big afternoon was grinding the valves on his Model A. And I could see him, see? And I said to him, I've been trying to get him to go because in my circle, we were all little Martys ourselves, see? In my circle, it would never occur to any of us to go to the prom alone with a girl unarmed. You know, alone. So I was trying to get Schwartz to go. So I kept saying, hey, Schwartz, hear what she's saying? It's important. Schwartz said, I'll knock it off. I said, well, Schwartz, there's only one prom in your life, Schwartz. And he turns to me and he says, ah, knock it off, will you? See, he's getting worried. I says, okay, Schwartz. When I go to the prom and 5 years later you come and ask me how great the prom was, I'll say, forget it. It's none of your business. We sit there. And Miss Schneider begins to hand out the bids. They came in little envelopes. They were engraved. And it said, Mr. Gene Shepherd is hereby invited to the senior class banquet and prom to be held at the Cherry Hills Country Club. The Cherry Hills Country Club. That's where I caddied. Now they're going to let me in the big house, see? You know, with the orange lights and the dance hall and all that bit. It's going to be held there, see? So I said to Schwartz, come on, Schwartz, come on. Will you just do this favor for me? He says, how about a girl? I says, look, Schwartz. And I'm desperately thinking, see? I says, look, Schwartz, I'll ask Esther Jane Alberry to go to the prom with me. And I'll see if she's got a girlfriend. Do you think she'd go? I said, I think so, Schwartz. Let's try it. He says, oh, okay. And so that afternoon, see, I had a double weight on me. I am carrying Schwartz's future. I am carrying Schwartz's memory, see? I also had one of these romantic mothers who, about every 2 years, would look to me and say, do you realize you're living through the best years of your life? I'd say, oh, Ma, shut up, will you? Gee whiz. You know, pimples are coming out, best years of my life. You know, and all I could think of was Mr. Pittenger in algebra, and she's telling me the best years of my life. You know, I'm worrying. I can't understand quadratic equations. I'm going to flunk, and I got kicked in the head of the football practice. And she says, these are the best years of your life. My mother believed in proms because she never went to one. Yeah, I just wonder how many of us right now, grown-up people in this room, are living lives directed largely by our parents at one point or another who never did what we're doing, and now they hate us for it. Oh, yeah, my old man was always after me to get an education. I'll never forget the first time I came home with a Latin book. And he says, what's that? I says, well, Dad, that's Latin grammar. He says, Latin grammar? Is that what they're teaching you in college? He thought they taught you in college on maybe how to design Oldsmobiles. You know, it began to bug him that I was going to school and I read books he didn't understand. I remember the time I brought home Ulysses. And I left it on the table in the living room and the old man picked it up and he says, look at that. It was a college book. See, all of his life he worshipped college. And look at the language. I mean, he always said, go to college. And it says, you know what James Joyce always said, you know. He didn't even know the Irish talked like that, you know. He didn't know that. He had an idea. You know, a lot of people who in that area out there, they feel, they have vague ideas about laws, that there is a law against guys writing this in a book. And he couldn't understand how I could have this, and it's obviously against the law, and the college gave it to me. And I remember sitting at supper with him, explaining to him who James Joyce was. And he says, now look, he says, if I ever came home with a book that had language like that, and my old man saw it, He would tan me to within an inch of my hide. And he sat there for a minute. And you know, it's funny when you see your own father collapse. You know, I can understand why Arthur Miller wrote what he did, see. The old man turns and he looks at the icebox. This is the world he'd created for us. The icebox, the sink. He bought it, see. He created me, my kid brother. And now we're putting him down. And he turns to the icebox and he came out with one of his words under his breath. The kind of word that James Joyce would have had him arrested for. Yeah, you know, he's black, guys. My mother says, shh, the kids are listening. My old man says, kids. Yeah, they're kids, all right. And I'm sitting over there, I'm trying to smoke. I'm back from school, you know, my first semester, that whole bit. And so now it is the semester and the year before that. I am still a stripling. My mother says, go to the prom. I want to go to the prom. And for a year and a half, the prom has been the one thing that's been hanging over the college like the golden fleece, like the golden apples of Jason. The prom. Go after it. It's like the elephant's graveyard. By the way, did any of you ever have a father who talked about the elephant's graveyard? There was a myth in Indiana that all the elephants went someplace and died. And nobody knew where it was. They had a secret graveyard. And they went there and they died and they left their ivory tusks there. My old man read a book once that said that. And all of his life he says, you know what I'm going to do one day? I'm going to save up. I'm going to take a trip to Africa and look for the elephant's graveyard. Now, if I wrote a line like that in the play, everyone would say, Shepherd has a fantastic imagination. He'd sit there and he'd say it. He says, he's going to go to the elephants. Speaking of dead elephants, that reminds me. What radio station is this? Come on, hit it. AM and FM, New York, the elephant's graveyard. Have you ever had a feeling you're living in a graveyard in New York? The cabs are out on strike. The guys that drive the diesel engines knock off because they can't have beer with their pizzas. The president of the railroad is knocking them down. What a calamari, you know. And I'm right out there tonight, some guy shooting at other people with a BB gun. Oh, what a city, you know. It's certainly a summer festival, isn't it? I'll tell you. You bring your bulletproof Bible to town, you'll have fun here. Well, you know, it's a funny thing. The night of the prom, I'll never forget it. It was announced that it was to be informal. Well, now, I don't know whether you know how the word formal dress hits Hammond, Indiana. I mean, their idea of formal dress, really, is pressed overalls. I'm not kidding. It's a steel mill town, you know. And on Sunday, a guy would take out his Sunday overalls and walk around, you know. And I can remember guys with their Sunday safety shoes on, you know. You know, they polish them, you know, they wear them. And you ought to see a guy with his Sunday blue work shirt on. And they even have Sunday ties. You get them at Sears Roebuck, and they're made out of linoleum. And they're black, you know, and they snap on. So these guys would walk around on Sunday. They're all dressed up, and you can hear the starch cracking in their knees, you know, crack, crack. That was the idea. By the way, one of the funniest things I've ever seen in connection with that, have you ever seen steel workers go to the beach? That is worth a view, I'll tell you. You know, they see pictures of people at the beach, and they're wearing sunglasses. And I saw a steel worker at the beach wearing his open-heart glasses. Yeah, he thought they were saying, you know, he's walking, can't see a thing, you know, he's walking. He'd look up at the sun once in a while to see if it's still up, you know. A steel worker, oh yeah, I remember going swimming. You know, it's funny, we here in the East, we don't realize what tremendous physical resources we've got. But I remember swimming in Lake Michigan. Now, when you think of Lake Michigan, what do you think of Lake Michigan? Yeah, you think, you know, the crystal blue water, the Indians, Hiawatha. Oh, you know, the whole bit, apple cheeks and Indiana and all that stuff. Let me tell you about Lake Michigan, friends. For those of you who complain about Rockaway Beach, let me tell you about Lake Michigan. Our idea of going swimming was to go down just past the Lever Works plant. The Lever Brothers people made soap, see? And they had on top of their plant a great big box of soap. Yeah, you remember that, Mel? That big box of soap? He's from the same area. They had this big box of soap, and it was painted on the side. It said, Rinso. That was it. And you knew it was summertime when they would change the paint on the Rinso sign. They'd get up there, and they'd paint it green. See, it says Rinso. And right next to that was the Mazola plant. You know what Mazola is? That's that cooking oil, Amazo. Well, you'd be surprised how it smells when they're making it. It does not smell like crisp donuts frying on TV. Here's the Amazo plant, see? Here's the Lever Brothers plant. Over here are 7,000 open hearts. And all of them, together and in concert, were spitting in the lake. They were throwing junk in there. The Amazo plant was throwing old used whale oil. See, it would go in. And Lever Brothers would throw in. Have you ever taken a swim? Seriously, we would swim in the lake, and the detergent, waves of detergent, would just, it was worse than Salt Lake City. You could not sink. In fact, guys used to run, you know, they'd get back on the shore, see, and they'd run over to bust the tin cans, you know. They're jumping in, they jump in the lake and bounce. You ever seen a guy bounce off the surface of the lake, all this Mazola and blast furnace crud, and we'd be floating there, see, the old man is floating. His two-piece bathing suit. He loved to float, see. He's the only guy I knew who could float with his straw hat on. He'd float there, you know, and he wears his glasses. And the detergent is washing over him. And then once in a while, a little Mazola oil would go through his hair, down his nose, you know. Blast furnace dust would come down. He'd say, you know, ain't this the life of Riley? He really did, you know. You can imagine Riley out there swimming in the detergent, you know. You imagine Rockefeller in the detergent. Well, this is the kind of world we had. And the idea of formal wear, I mean formal wear, was completely unknown. Was totally unknown. We didn't even know where to get it. It was supposed to be formal. Now, my mother was sitting there that night, you know, and my dad says, I says, Dad, I got to go formal to this thing. He says, formal? He says, you can wear my suit. You should have seen my dad's suit. My dad loved it because it was called Forest Green and had a thin yellow stripe. It had lapels that went out here, you know. He had padding that stuck out like this, you know. And that was his good suit. He says, well, you can wear my good suit. I says, no, Dad, it's formal. They tell me that you've got to get a formal. It's a tuxedo. He says, a tuxedo. My mother says, a tuxedo. And she sat there, you know. All of her life, she had dreamed of going just one place with a guy in a tuxedo. She was of the Fred Astaire era. And to her, the most fantastic magic in the world was to see Fred Astaire on top of a piano. You know, dancing away with this tuxedo. And Ginger Rogers up there swinging around with him. And she says, you're going in a tuxedo. And I says, yeah. She says, oh, that's wonderful. She says, will you let me pick it out? I says, no, Ma, come on. You know, they're all going to rent these tuxedos. And that afternoon, I am at the place where you rent tuxedos. Boy, is that, this is something women have never known. Have you ever known that, women? I know you haven't. It's one of the most humiliating things in the world to realize you got to go to this crummy little joint over the pool room. They're always rotten little places. They really, you can smell the fish coming up. It's over the pool room, and they have this big tin sign. You've seen that tin sign over here on 6th Avenue? It's a guy with a tall silk hat. And underneath it, it says, Tuxes, for rent. And you go up the stairs, and you can hear the dentist office. And now you're in this little place. I think this is one of the truly most humiliating moments to realize that you have to rent glory. Has it occurred to you that you're renting glory? You know, you got to rent it. So I walk in there. I say to the guy, I'm going to the Hammond High. He says, that's all right. We've got the Hammond High number right here. There have been 5,000 other kids, see. They said, okay, we've got the Hammond High. They're all wearing this. And he goes back and he brings it out. Oh, boy. It's white. I had never in my life put on a white coat. It's white. It's got a little boutonniere. You know that little maroon flower made out of fuzz, you know, it's there, you see. And he says, do you want the midnight blue stripe or do you want the black silk stripe? I have midnight blue. He says, okay, let's try it on. I put it on. It's real tight around the hips, you know. Real tight, boy, and it pulls in. It's got little skinny pants. And he says, here, try the cummerbund. I says, cummerbund? Somehow, it sounded a little obscene. You know, I says, cummerbund? He says, yes, try it. He says, here, pull in your stomach. And he stretched it around here. You know, it's that silk band, and it's maroon. Comes around like that, see. I've got a shirt on that's got ruffles. Boy, what a feeling. It's got a little black stud sticking out of it. He puts the tie on. But there I stand, in my tennis shoes. And there I stand in front of the mirror, you know, and I walk back and I look at it. Now I knew what life was about. It was that moment that I began to get bugged with Hammond, Indiana. You know, that brief instant. Pull my stomach in. Oh, what a feeling, see. That afternoon, I go home with this in a box. It's all wrapped up. They even include cufflinks. The whole thing, it rattles, see. Take it home. Put it on the table. It's my old man's day off. My mother is there. My father says, can I see it? We open it up. I hold it up. White coat. And I could see that funny look in his eye. And he says, do you mind if I try it on? I said, no, go ahead, Dad. I was a little bit bigger than he was, see. Yeah, you know, all sons are a little bit bigger than their fathers. God help us in the year 3000. And he takes my coat, see, and it's a little bit big, and he puts it on. It's a white coat. I swear this is the only time before and after in his entire life that he had on a tuxedo. He put it on. He stood there. We had one of these full-length mirrors, you know, in the closet. He looked at himself. Pretty spiffy. That is a word you never hear anymore. That's a daddy word. Just pretty spiffy, huh? Just hotcha. Hot diggity dog. I says, Dad, you're going to rip the pants. Cut it out. He says, hot dog. He starts to tap dance. He was a Fred Astaire type. I says, come on, Dad, take it off. He says, okay. He takes it off and he puts it back in the box. His brief moment of glory. I tear out in the backyard and I start to polish my Ford. I had this Ford. Well, every one of us has a thing in our lives that's more important than any other thing. I had worked for 2 years solid to buy this little Ford coupe, a convertible. I'd worked for years. It was mine. I had made every valve in it. Every cotter pin in this car I knew intimately. I had spit on every valve spring to keep it from rattling. I had personally made that little gas gauge myself. Beautiful car, see. And I go out and I polish it. All afternoon. It's shining. The interior is clean. And that night, I drove out. You know that great feeling when you're a kid? You got the top down on your car. It's warm out. You're in a white coat. A white coat, think of it. A ruffled shirt. You got that red flower. A cummerbund. You're driving your car, and it was baby blue. I had it painted baby blue, and it just shone. It just gleamed. and I'm driving through the night. The stars. I'm going to the prom. I pick up Schwartz, and Schwartz comes down from his house. It was twilight. You know that twilight moment of magic? Schwartz comes down in a white coat. He walks down. He looking kind of funny. He says, "Hey, Schwartz, you look good in the monkey suit." He says, "Ha, ha, you do too." We secretly knew we looked fantastic. You know? So Schwartz sits next to me, and the two of us tool along. We get to Schwartz's girl's house. I toot the horn. Schwartz gets out. He goes up. And down the steps they come. He is with Helen. And she's got an evening gown on. A real evening gown. Schwartz has got her a corsage. How many of you remember the first corsage you ever bought? And how lousy it looked? Well, here she comes with the corsage. She sits down back in the back with Schwartz. And I drive along, you know. The empty seat. Esther Jane. This is a thing. You know, it's funny. I think some people early in life develop a third eye. And they keep commenting on their life. Others never do. They just take it as it comes. They don't remember anything. And already at that age, I'm saying to myself, this is the greatest night of your life. It's the prom. This is it. We're going to the prom. This is your senior prom. You're graduating. Next week, you're out. This is the prom. This is it. And you can smell the catalpa trees. You can hear my valves knocking. You know, and you can hear that muffler going, bah, 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 my Hollywood muffler that I was so proud of, you know. Bah, 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 bah. We drive up in front of Esther's house. I get out. I go into the house, and I wait. She comes down the stairs. I'm in my white coat. Esther Jane is dressed in yellow. She's got this yellow dress. And I had sent her a purple corsage. You ever seen a purple corsage with a yellow dress? She was like a human Christmas tree ornament, you know? And Esther Jane, I have to tell you, Esther Jane was kind of a fat girl. She was fat in the Judy Garland sense. You know, kind of round, you know, cuddly. And already she's sweating down through here, see? And I said, "Let's go, Esther. Come on, let's go, see? Let's go to the prom." And her mother says, "Have a good time." And her old man gives me that look. Is this going to be the kid? Is this going to be the one? And he gives me that look. Bring her back at midnight right after the prom. Yeah. But, of course, you know, in our world, it was traditional to stay out all night the night of the prom. You know that bit? Everybody after the prom, you go to this big party and all that stuff. And so now we are at the Cherry Hills Country Club. I drive up in front with my Ford. And believe it or not, a kid is there and says, "Your car, sir?" He's going to drive my Ford. I says, "Watch the clutch, Jack." I says, "That baby will throw you right over the back seat." He says, "Oh, cool it, Jack." He was another kid, you know. He wasn't going to the prom. He was working. I says, "Knock it off, you nothing." He says, "Okay, get in." I says, "Okay, wait." He gets in. Boom! I said, "Okay, smart guy." In we go into the prom. All right, now we're in the prom. Oh, what a moment. Oh, fantastic. Up there is Mickey Eisley and his Mickey band. Oh, yeah, and they're playing away, you know. And hanging from the ceilings, they had these Japanese lanterns. All over, you know, they were red and green. And they had a searchlight, you know, a spotlight that goes around. You're red and you're green and you're purple and you're blue. And up here it says, "Senior Prom, Hammond High School." And it was all done in sequence with hanging. See, this is Hammond, Indiana splendor. I walk in and of course, in the middle are dotted the chaperones. Here was Miss Snyder, who's gone to 4,000 proms in her lifetime, you know, and she's in her simple black. I had never seen her outside of school. And she's sitting over there, and she's with a man. You know, it's funny when you see a teacher that you've known all of your life, this little teacher, and she's with a man. And she's with this little gray man. And he kept nodding. He kept falling asleep. And this is Miss Snyder's boyfriend, you know? Oh, yeah, she says, Gene, I want you to meet my boyfriend, Mr. Stafford. You know, he keeps falling asleep, you know. It's somehow, you know, it's all Tennessee Williams. I can see the two of them, 38 years, they've been going steady, you know. They started when they were 40, see. And now here they are, they're watching proms all their life, you see. They're never going to get married, he doesn't believe, until his mother dies. She's 240, you know. Plays basketball every day. Poor old Mr. Stafford now is pushing 80, you know, and he keeps talking about mom. And Miss Snyder, of course, is living with her sister, Flora. And here, and she's jealous of Miss Snyder for going with Mr. Stafford, you know, the whole bit. And so here they're sitting by the side there, and the palms are all around them, and above it it says, welcome, welcome Hammond High seniors, the prom. And they're sitting there. And sitting next to him, this little old man, is Miss Norton. Now, if you got to know Miss Norton. Every time I see that carborundum ad, the Norton Steel carborundum ad, I think of Miss Norton. Miss Norton was stainless steel. She had a steel-colored dress. She had two little steel marbles. And she was the entertainment chairman. And you can imagine what her entertainment, she designed the punch. It was light cocoa malt with a little Ovaltine in it, see? With some pop thrown in, that kind of thing, see? So here they're sitting, and the first thing, somehow, you know, it's funny how your manners will work. I see Miss Snyder over there, and I've got Esther Jane. So we walk in. Immediately, I've got these dancing shoes on, which came with the tuxedo. Now, when you're used to wearing tennis shoes and safety shoes, suddenly dancing shoes, so I start skating across the floor. Gee, how light your feet are, you know? You know, you put them, you know, those soft shoes on, you want to jump up and down, see? So we go across over to Miss Snyder, and I said, Miss Snyder, this is Esther Jane. She looks up, says, pleased to meet you, Esther Jane. Would both of you like to meet my boyfriend, Mr. Stafford? Her boyfriend. Glad to meet you, Mr. Stafford. We shake hands, and this little claw grabs me, you know. He starts to snooze. And the band is playing. And now we were out on the floor, see. Me and Esther Jane. This is the first time I've ever held her close. And it took a prom to do it, see. And now here we are, see. We're dancing. And the band is going, da-cha-da-cha-cha-cha. Cha-cha-da-da-chee. Cha-cha. And here her ear is right here. And it's sweating. Yeah, you see. And Esther Jane has got a hold of me. And all the time there was a hair in my padding that was boring its way through my shoulder. And I'm going like this. See, I just... Oh, it's just... I'm itching and I'm starting to sweat. And my shorts are grabbing me. And we're walking around. Cha-cha-da-da-cha-cha. Oh, it's just pouring. And Esther turns to me and she says, isn't this nice? And I get this blast of red cabbage. You know, and then there's... She's wearing this perfume that everybody wore. It was a perfume that Woolworth sold called Radio Girl. It glowed in the dark, see? And I'm dancing around with this perfume and it's making me sick, you know? It's coming up. And here is my beautiful corsage. Well, have you ever looked an orchid right in the eye? It's got a big tongue. It's a big purple tongue, you know. It's yellow and purple. It's got hair all over it. And so help me God, that orchid is coughing, you know. And we're going around Esther Jane, you know, and it's, I keep saying to myself, this is the prom. You remember this all of your life. And I said to Esther, I said, isn't this romantic, Esther? And she says, yes. Her girdle is grabbing her, you know. And I could feel it, you know. We're just going back. And the band just kept going on and on and on. And once in a while, Schwartz would float past. His eyes were red, you know. Schwartz never danced in his life. And now this chick's got a hold of his shoulder blade, you know. She's pulling him around. And occasionally, Flick would bob up out of the sea. Flick would say, "Hi, Shep." And the band is going, cha-cha-cha-cha, on and on. And then all of a sudden, it just seemed like after 400 years, they start playing, cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha. It's all over. And we start going out. That's the problem. Mr. Jane is with me, and the orchid is sort of hanging down. And it goes, "Help," once in a while. Esther Jane is sweat all down the back, you know. And funny thing, somehow her mother talked her into wearing a pink slip. Have you ever seen a pink slip sweated through a yellow gown? She got this big red stripe down the back, you know. And I'm walking with her, you know. We get out, and we walk out, and it is raining cats and dogs. Oh, my God, it's just, boom, it's coming up. We've been in another world, you know, and now it's raining, and my top is down. Oh, I says, "All right, wait a minute, Esther Jane." And there's poor old Schwartz is waiting with his chick. I says, "I'll go get the car." So I plunge into the rain, you know, the hell, it's all over now anyway. The rain is coming down my white coat. Here's my Ford, up right up to the top water, see. I open the door, blue. I bail it out, and I sit down. And I can see my red buttonhole flower is now melting, you know. The red stripe and my tie is hanging cockeyed. And my suit, my cummerbund is grabbing. I drive up to the front. I get them. They sit in the car. We go two blocks. When all of a sudden, my left rear, boom. Oh, it's raining. Me and Flick get out and change the tire. And Schwartz was thinner. Oh, he says, "You and your crummy car. My old man would have let us the car. You want to use yours? All right." 15 minutes later, we're in the Red Rooster. Now, there was a place that we all went to. How many of you know the place you go after the prom? Schwartz, myself, Helen, Esther Jane sit down. And it's our prom night. We're all melted and her flowers hanging down. And we're supposed to drink. We never drank. 3.5 minutes later, and 7 Cokes and rums later, I'm in the John. Schwartz is in the John. Both of us are... Esther Jane is in hers. And in the cold light of dawn, we draw up, and you can see this stuff all over the front of my coat. She's got scrambled eggs on her... I said, "Okay, I'll see you, Esther. So long. Good prom, baby." And she staggers up into the darkness. Schwartz goes up into his darkness. And that night, I go into bed. And my mother's waiting up. And she says, "How was the prom?" And I says, "Ma, it was wonderful." And to this day, my mother keeps saying to me, "Well, you were lucky. At least you had a prom in your life."
This is WOR Radio, your station for news.